Thank you all for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and this is the World Peace Diet Circle Call for January 17th, 2019. Madeline and I are in Sedona. We just got here about a few hours ago, and it's great to be here. We've been on the road now for, I'd say, about a week or a little over a week, working on spreading the vegan message as best we can wherever we go. And it's gone really well. We did an event in Pasadena. It was about a week ago. Let's see, what's today? Thursday. Yeah, it was Thursday night, actually, exactly a week ago in Pasadena. And then we headed to Phoenix, and we've been really busy in Phoenix. We've done, I think, about seven events, I think it was, in about 4 days, something like that, 7 or 8 events. So welcome, everyone. We'll talk maybe a little bit more about some of those things. What we usually like to do, as you all know, in the beginning of our time together is to take a few minutes and just center in and feel our connection with each other and so forth. So wherever you are, if you're driving, don't do it. Don't close your eyes. No, but if you have a moment, just to turn your attention within and let's just breathe together and give thanks that we have this precious opportunity to be together again on the third Thursday of this month, to join our consciousness, our yearnings, our commitment to animals, to ecosystems, and to the earth, and to our loved ones, to hungry people, to future generations, to the cells and organs and systems in our own body, and to the awakening of human consciousness. And know that we are part of a larger movement that is gathering momentum. I feel with every passing day, the momentum is building. So we give thanks for all the efforts that everyone is making to do this, and we give thanks also for the clarity and joy and freedom and understanding that we're experiencing in our own lives, knowing that the more whatever we focus on expands, whatever we give thanks for prospers, and we can give thanks knowing that the vegan movement is growing, and it really is. It's remarkable how quickly it's growing. And we also give thanks for our connection with the non-human animals, companion animals, wild free-living animals, and also the millions of animals who are used for food and products and so forth. We give thanks for their lives and their sacrifices, that they may not be in vain, that they may actually, hopefully, help us awaken to the truth that we are. We give thanks for all the efforts of so many other people, in not only in the United States and Europe and Australia, but in Africa and Asia and South America, and even, I'm sure, in probably some in Antarctica that are vegans. So we know that no effort is ever lost. Every time we plant a seed, we can give thanks for the opportunity to plant the seed, and we can give thanks also for the people who are helping us along our path. And we're delighted that we're able to have a lifetime devoted to awakening not only our own consciousness, but to work together to help the awakening of humanity. So, give thanks knowing this is so. And so it is. All right. So, as you all know, we have the option. All of you have the option of pressing the *6 on your phone, and if you press *6 on your phone, that will show that you would like to be connected and to the call. That I can unmute your phone, which is always exciting because you can say whatever you like, and So I'm trying to see here. So I'm looking and I'm seeing that we have, let's see here. We're supposed to be having a guest. I'm just going to double check something and just take some moment here. And Shelly, yeah, okay, good. So I'd like to dive right in. We always have a lot to talk about on these monthly calls, and but we're really fortunate to have with us a special guest who's a dear friend of ours. Her name is Shelly Ryan, and she's the she's a person who's spent a lot of time exploring the impact of human activity and climate change, climate destabilization, global warming, and especially, you know, she's a vegan and tries to really bring in the human impact through animal agriculture on the climate. She has a certificate of training from the Climate Reality Project, which is basically created by Al Gore, and she was taught by Gore himself back in 2012. She also has a master's degree from JFK University in the East Bay here in California on museum education. And basically for the last, gosh, long time, probably the last almost 20 years, she's been giving webinars and radio program talks and in-person climate change presentations covering the issues of weather impact, sustainability, clean energy, food choices, and commercial versus regenerative agriculture, and the current extinction event that's going on. And she's been doing this with civic groups, churches, museums, schools, activist groups. She put on a whole series, actually, in where we live, which is in Lake County, about an hour north of Santa Rosa in Northern California, and I think did a great job with planting lots of seeds, getting local speakers to address the climate change issue, including me. Actually, I spoke, and Madeline and I and Shelly have been working together on these things. So I'm just really delighted that Shelly is able to join us and talk a little bit about how climate change and animal agriculture go together, and what she's been able to do in terms of attending conferences and speaking to people. And I do want to say that we see these effects all the time. You know, we're in Northern California, we're experiencing this directly, and a lot of places around the world are experiencing these impacts. So I'm so delighted that Shelly is with us. I'm going to go ahead now and unmute her phone. Let's see if this works. And Shelly, welcome to our call. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Thank you very much for having me on this.
Hey, good. Glad to have you with us. And I'll go ahead and if you could, just say a little bit, maybe tell the folks who are listening. Everyone who's listening, as I think I explained, is already a vegan on board. A vegan, they're people who have read the World Peace Diet and are doing the best, and we're all doing the best we can to spread the message of vegan living, compassion, sustainability, and freedom in a variety of ways. So, but I think, you know, your expertise in the impact, the connection really between climate change and food is remarkable, and if you could share some of the main points that we could share with other people that would be effective, you know, like what you think all of us could emphasize when we're talking to people who care, you know, about the environment. Most people do care about the environment, about climate, and about their health, and about the health of their children. It's all really dependent. So much of it is dependent on how we treat our earth and the ecosystems and the climate here. So if you could maybe talk a little bit and tell us the kinds of things that we could say to people I think that would be great, actually. And then people, everyone who's listening, if you have any questions for Shelley, remember you can press *6 on your phone, and we can have a conversation. If you're interested, if you have any points you'd like to make or any concerns or questions you may have. So, Shelley, yes, please go ahead and let us know what you think about this, if you don't mind.
Well, yes. In my talk, I talked generally about the science of greenhouse gases and the influence on the climate, the global effects of rising temperatures on the environment, the fires we've seen, and the floods and droughts and hurricanes, especially in the last few years, and what's being done to counter climate change and what each of us can do, including getting away from eating meat. That's quite a big issue, and it is becoming more well known or more talked about how important this issue is, but still a lot of people don't understand the connection. And I always emphasize in my talks the strong role of commercial agriculture, big ag, commercial animal ag, and our food choices in driving climate change. And some of the main points here that I can talk a little bit about, and there's so much to this. This is very cursory overview. There are literally thousands of books written on climate change, thousands of books and research papers, documentaries being made, et cetera. But some of the big takeaways here with the influence of commercial agriculture on climate change, that big ag pollutes and depletes the topsoil, and healthy soils hold more carbon dioxide, which is one of the main greenhouse gases. Agricultural animals, especially cattle, emit methane in their digestive processes and in their feces. And methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. In fact, it's about 30 times more potent than carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide and methane being the two main drivers of climate change. And then there's deforestation to make room for cattle and to grow food for cattle. And especially happening in the tropics, that this is a huge problem and continuing unabated. And then the transportation of cattle and other food animals while they're alive, transportation to where they're going to stay or where they're going to live or where they're going to be eating. And until they're slaughtered, and then transportation after they're dead to the grocery stores. Actually, all this and more accounts for about 50% of greenhouse gas emissions worldwide. And that's a lot more than the 15 to 18% we often see here quoted. But that 15 to 18% is only taking a cursory look at the problem. So people can help tremendously with climate change, not to say nothing of helping, agricultural animals in their plight, being victims of our eating habits. But people can help a lot with climate change and these other issues by eating less meat or going vegan, as evidently all the people in your group are doing, and eating and being mindful of these issues, and yes, if possible, sharing this information by reading more and becoming more knowledgeable about climate change and the influence of our agricultural systems on climate worldwide. Climate destabilization. I like that word better. I like that phrase better than climate change, because in some areas the climate may be getting colder and they are going that direction because the climate is actually being destabilized, so it's manifesting as colder, more snowy, and also warmer. So.
Wow. And how has your response generally been, would you say, over the years? Have you seen a change, any kind of change, development, and who seems to be most resistant, who seems to be most active in this? Do you see any glimmers of hope in this whole thing?
You mean on climate change or on the animal aspect of it?
Well, I'm thinking mainly about the climate change, you know, people's awareness of climate change and also their awareness of animal agriculture's impact on climate change.
Most people that I talk with are ignorant about the animal aspect of it, the impact of animal agriculture on the climate. And it just hasn't gotten out enough for the general populace to understand it. And as far as climate change in general, I know from talking with people from other countries that people are more accepting of the problem, of the issue.
How veganism would help? They're more accepting in other countries, you think?
Change in general. They're more accepting of that. And a lot of people in this country don't accept that they don't want to. They're perhaps for fear there are many reasons for that. But more needs to be, more information needs to be gotten out by more people on this, on the connection between animal agriculture and climate change, so that, you know, I do see a lot more people becoming interested in veganism and vegetarianism and changing their diet, and they do that for a lot of reasons, health, spiritual, whatever, the environment. But this specific connection, I think more people would even be more interested in going plant-based if they knew just how powerful their impact is, just how powerful the impact is of eating meat, how powerful it impacts the environment in general, but climate change specifically.
Right. Do you talk about like the difference in their between different types of meat? You know, like the beef is much worse than say chicken or lamb is much worse than whatever, turkey or something like that. Do you ever get into that, or do you just encourage people to just go to a plant-based diet?
Well, I encourage getting away from all animals.
And cheese, too, animals. Actually. I mean,
dairy, all of it. And none of it's really healthy for us. But I do emphasize cattle because they're a very large animal for one thing, and there are so many of them, and the deforestation is mainly about running cattle on land or growing food for them. So I have a tendency to emphasize that, but it's all of it is important, and as you know, there's a lot of pollution of the environment in general coming from all animal agriculture. Cattle in particular emit methane, and that's a strong greenhouse gas, so I emphasize that a little bit more.
Right, yeah. So what about, do you have any inside scoop at all or anything about Al Gore is his educational program still going? Is he still training people? And if so, is he now bringing in the importance of vegan living as part of the message that he wants people to share?
Well, Al Gore is still going strong. He does two trainings a year, and they occur all over the world for the type of training that I took, so which is basically to use his slides to present any aspect of climate change that you could think of except animal agriculture. And this is very odd to me, and it's odd to the other people who take his training who are interested in veganism or vegetarianism, plant-based diet, because he's a vegan, and he does not talk about it. And I have to say that neither I nor his other trainees who are interested in this issue understand why he doesn't talk about it, but he doesn't. And as far as I know, from the people who took his training last year, he did not talk about it at all in the training. So all the slides that I have in my presentation having to do with animal agriculture, I have gotten them on my own. And I have quite a few that, you know, that I have quite a few to show, but none of them came from him because he doesn't have, he doesn't deal with that strangely.
Wow.
Uh-huh. It's very strange.
If anyone, if any of you who are listening, if you have any questions or any theories about this, you can enlighten Shelley and me about why Al Gore doesn't bring that in, because it's, I think it is getting more, I mean, from my point of view, it's getting more press that animal agriculture is a key factor in the global climate destruction, basically, that's happening. I mean, the destabilization and so forth, the chaos that we're seeing quite a bit of it. And
yeah.
I see it in the media. I mean, The Guardian, the San Francisco Chronicle, the even, you know, some of the magazines, like The Economist magazine, some of the others, they're talking about the fact that it's well understood that animal agriculture not only is very inefficient in terms of feeding people, but that it really creates a lot of greenhouse gases and methane, nitrous oxide, it's cutting down rainforests. You know, it's so obvious. I mean, it seems that. But on the other hand, I mean, I know you're totally right, because at the many of these climate change conferences, everybody's eating meat. I read that recently. The one didn't they just have one in Poland? Am I right about that? And,
yes, the COP24, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that one I was reading was the worst. I mean, it was like the worst it's ever been. It was all meat and dairy, everything. Everybody was eating meat and dairy everywhere. Well, they didn't even pretend to try to reduce, you know, the amount of meat and dairy they were feeding
the
delegates. I mean, how is that possible? What's going on? What do you think's going on? Do you have any theory about it? Or?
I don't. I don't understand it. Except that I can tell you one thing about the United Nations and their work on climate change, that they are strongly influenced by companies and companies that have ties to the animal agriculture, that have ties to you know, gasoline, you know, Chevron and Shell and BP and all the rest of them. In fact, those companies not only have verbal influence, but they also influence the reports that come out from the UN on this issue. And United Nations has been castigated for this quite a bit, for their involvement with these companies, but the companies do have a very strong influence, and that may very well be the excuse for the United Nations for not, you know, having vegan or vegetarian food available and having the meat on the menu. I don't think it's Al Gore's. That's not his excuse. I don't know what his excuse is, but definitely with the United Nations, they are, unfortunately, we could say, perhaps not financially or maybe, but they're bought out by some of these big companies. And that doesn't do anybody any good, and it's not making the process or the efforts any easier, you know, to get the word out and to work on ameliorating climate change. But that is unfortunately part of the picture.
Right, right. Oh, thanks so much for clarifying that and for giving us a sort of a good overview of the kinds of things that we could share. And, of course, I know, would you recommend that people take this training that are vegans?
Yes, I actually would. It's, for one thing, it's an excellent way to network with people. When I took my training, there were 1,000 trainees there, and usually there were hundreds of people at the trainings from all walks of life. And Al Gore is a tireless worker for this problem. And even though he's not saying anything about veganism or changing diets, other than that, you know, he sets a fine example of trying to help with a problem that is extremely serious.
Right. And do they give you, as part of the training, do they give you training on how to actually arrange presentations, you know, who to contact, or what types of groups to approach, all that kind of stuff? Do you think that would be good to share with people? I mean, there's quite a few people, I think, on the call who would like to be able to bring the vegan message to groups in their community, in their area, in their vicinity. And sometimes people don't want to come and hear a talk on veganism, but they might want to come and hear a talk on climate change. And then the person could talk about climate change and bring in the environmental impacts of animal agriculture, you know, along with a few other things. Do you have any suggestions in, like along those lines for people, groups that might be helpful, or groups that might be open, or avenues that might be open to people addressing this issue and getting it out, getting the word out there to more people?
Sure, a couple of things are very possible here. As to the trainings themselves, they're done, as I said before, they're done twice a year, different areas of the world. I happened to take my training in San Francisco, so that was convenient for me. But, there's also the chance to travel a little bit if a person is so inclined. But the trainings are held twice a year. They are free. They don't cost anything. And all a person needs to do is get there and, rent a hotel room. They last 3 days. The training lasts 3 days. And it's not just Al Gore, that he has other speakers who come in, who have, experience on climate change issues, very different aspects of it, because climate change covers influences just about every aspect of our lives. And the talks, the training, covers except the food aspect, it covers just about every other aspect of climate change influences. You know, the political, the economic, the social justice, et cetera.
All the different energy, I'm sure.
Energy, yes. Clean energies, yes. All of that. And so they can go that way. All I have to do is contact Al Gore's organization to look at it online to find out, you know, where the next trainings are going to be, and then go through the process that you have to go through to take the training. So you can't just show up; you have to put in an application and whatnot. Go ahead. What is that?
No. Go ahead. Keep going. Sorry.
Oh, okay. And then besides that way of being involved with his organization, you can also on the organization's website, they have listings of all the people who have taken the training and where they live, how to contact them. So if a person wants to have a speaker come and talk to their group, or maybe a group of people that they would like to get together to hear that information, they can contact the trainees in their particular area and have that, have a speaker, a trainee come
right.
and talk to them. So they can get involved in those two ways. Of course, people can also support Al Gore's organization, you know, in other ways, you know, financially or whatever. It's a nonprofit. But those are the two main ways that people could get involved there.
But then you, so you, when you go through the training, you just basically agree, I guess you don't probably don't have to, but you agree to give your location, I guess, so the town you live in and what your email and phone number are, so people who are interested could contact you. You kind of make yourself mm-hmm. somewhat public to be able to be contacted and give a talk.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. And then do they suggest, like, talking to different groups, like Rotary, Lions Club, church groups, you know, Knights of Columbus, or maybe, you know, parents
anybody who will listen.
Yeah. So basically just any you're just kind of on your own. I mean, just – and but they don't want you to charge, I think, right, for a talk usually?
We are. At least when I took the training, I signed an agreement that I would not charge for it. Now, some places that I've spoken, they have a stipend that they give to any speaker that they have, and I will accept that, but I'm not allowed to specifically set an amount that I charge for to do the talk,
right. Oh, but it sounds like a good
foundation. That might matter to some people. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to get the information out. So if I never got paid, it would be okay with me because I want people to know about this problem. But I have, you know, I have accepted stipends, you know, when they're offered.
Right. I know you've spoken at museums. You've spoken, been pretty creative. What are some of the places you've spoken at yourself?
Well, here in the United States, I've spoken in quite a number of museums and churches, civic groups, and other you know groups of people who schools, universities,
colleges,
And then when I lived from 2013 to 2016 in Costa Rica, and I was giving the climate change talk there, climate change and sustainability talk there, and it's pretty much the same scenarios: universities, high schools, church groups, civic groups,
mm-hmm.
just local groups. Yes, down in Costa Rica. Yeah. Now Costa Rica is an interesting case study. It's one of the most sustainable countries in the world. They get over 90%. They have for the last few years. They get over 90% of their energy from clean, renewable sources. And so I was sort of preaching to the choir down there as far as sustainability and clean energy was concerned, but still a lot of people didn't realize the impact that climate change is having all over the world. So that was some new information for them.
Right. Plus, of course, eating less meat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they are a big agricultural country, so that was somewhat of a challenge. But it doesn't matter, you know, to me if it's a challenge for people. I just put the information out, and they can do with it what they, you know, what they want to.
Right. Great. Well, that's a good overview, I think, and it's something that probably I think a lot of people could avail themselves of, really. And let's see, I don't see anybody pressing star six at this point. If anyone has, we're kind of getting to the end of our interview or our chat here with Shelley Ryan. So if you do want to ask a question, just press star six. We've got quite a few people on the call here, but I think it's very interesting because this is something that I think it is really, you know, so important for people to grapple with in some way. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where we just want to look the other way. But I think, you know, what you're doing is really admirable in the sense that it's a public service that you're providing. And if everyone, you know, could find a way to bring this message and especially tie in the animal agriculture to it. We do have a woman, someone, I'm not sure who it is, who's raised their hand. Let me just go ahead and unmute your phone. This is area code 480. Hello.
Hi, this is Andy.
Oh, hi, Andy. Nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear you guys, too. I actually have two questions. With the training, with the Al Gore's training, I'm wondering, one is, if he's physically up there teaching, and in any of these trainings, if someone can just ask him about, or has anyone ever asked him about the vegan diet and what his thoughts are and that type of thing, and that's question number one. Question number two is, if you or other people are doing your own trainings based on his teachings, would you be allowed to bring up the vegan diet and your own knowledge of it?
Great question. Shelley, what do you think?
Well, I have not spoken or communicated with anyone who's taken the training, or even seen any communication about anyone taking the training and actually asking Al Gore about the food issues. Now, I don't know how many people know he's a vegan. He doesn't put that out. I don't think it is well known that he is. But a person could, you know, when you're there at the trainings, there is question and answer time, and anybody could ask him about it.
I think actually I was talking to somebody a few years ago who took the training and who asked him publicly. He said, you know, he was a vegan, and he said, well, you know, why don't you include the animal agriculture in this? And he said that Al Gore's answer basically was that he didn't want to include that because he thought it would make people less likely to want to cooperate with the whole thing. So he thought that this is the best approach.
Oh,
yeah. He was kind of upfront about it. He just said he didn't think it was that effective because people don't want to change how they're eating.
Wow. So, okay. Interesting.
That certainly is. I hadn't heard that story. Okay.
Yeah, I talked to him. He was a guy. He came to one of my lectures and he told me he took Al Gore's training and he asked him, and that's what he said.
Wow.
So, I mean, if I remember correctly, I mean, I know I'm saying it relatively correctly, but he did ask him, and he did have an answer that he just thought it was too much for most people to want to change, and it would reduce the effectiveness of what he's trying to do. And I think that's why also he went vegan, but he did it in he announced it in a very low-key way. And it was run in the newspapers a few years ago. There was articles, Al Gore's a vegan. But it was sort of quickly swallowed up. He didn't seem to want to proclaim it or anything at all. But I guess he felt pressure probably from certain areas where he felt like, you know, he had to be a vegan if he was going to do this thing. But he didn't want, I think it might be a little bit like the Dalai Lama. You know, I remember, you know, living in Tibetan Buddhist centers, and everybody wonders, why is the Dalai Lama a vegan or at least a vegetarian? And he is, actually, for the most part, he is, traveling, but whenever he's in Dharamsala, he never, ever eats any meat. But I could really feel it, because since everybody else, all the other lamas eat meat, and it would just make them look bad. You know, if he was a vegetarian, and he's under this sort of pressure from all these elder monks to, you know, don't do that to us, you know, don't make us look bad. So that may be something that Al Gore is also feels, that if he came out as a vegan, and you know, that he'd lose a lot, it would create all of this you know, oh, are you a vegan or not a vegan, and why aren't you, and you should be, and you're not, and, you know, a lot of people are very afraid of veganism as a divisive issue. I know in churches, like, the minister will be a vegan or a vegetarian, and she'll never, a lot of times it's a woman, and they never want to mention it. They're afraid, oh, it's divisive, it'll make people feel guilty, I don't want to bring it up. And so I think that may be, I'm just guessing, but I think that's how a lot of times it's perceived.
Perhaps he thinks he's already dealing with one very divisive and difficult issue of climate change. He doesn't want to make it two.
I think that's probably what it is. He probably thinks it's hard enough doing what he's doing. That opens up a whole can of vegan worms sometimes. Your second question was just, are you allowed to bring the vegan thing on your own? And I think, Shelly, you feel fine to do that, right? You can bring in the vegan thing on your own, right?
Absolutely.
You don't have any problem doing that. Yeah.
No, I don't. No.
Right. So you can do whatever you want. You can say you're a Gore trainee, and you can go there, and you can talk about it, and you can put your old slides together and talk about the importance of animal agriculture and causing climate things to mess up and everything else to mess up. And I guess it would be fine, unless maybe you think someone might complain to Al Gore and say, what the heck, you know, I thought it was going to be like you, but she wasn't like you. She was playing the vegan card. I doubt there'd be any feedback like that, but... You don't have that concern then, right, Shelley?
No, I don't.
Somebody would report you or something.
And people know pretty much what I'm going to talk about before I go to a talk. So there are no surprises.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Andy. Yeah. All right.
Thank you for being on the call.
Thanks.
Oh, there's one more person has a question. Okay, I'll go ahead and unmute this caller. Area code 914. Hello.
That's me. It's Will.
Oh,
Will.
Hi.
Susan Patry.
Susan, hi.
In Long Island. Hi.
Long Island. Right. Hi.
Hi. Just want to say, Will, your questions and Shelley's presentation was so good and very empowering. And it was hard to catch it all because I was like trying to take notes. It seemed like she had three main points, and I wanted to ask, can she convey those to you so maybe we could get it in writing? And because I would really, find it really helpful just, anyway. But the other thing is that, and Shelley, so thank you very much. But also, you know how Dr. Oberlander is so great about climate? And I haven't read anything except the first book, but I wonder what Shelley would have to say about his work as compared to Al Gore and George. Maybe it would be great if Dr. Oberlander could make a training like Al Gore did.
I think Richard Oberlander, I'm not sure what's happened to him, quite honestly. It seems like I don't really see too much from him in the last year or so.
He was supposed to come to Long Island for the Real Truth About Health conference last year, and something happened, and he couldn't make it, so I don't know either.
Yeah, he has a wonderful book. His first book that he wrote was great.
Comfortably Unaware. Yeah,
Comfortably Unaware. And then he wrote another book, which I read, and I have to say, it's fantastic. I can't remember the name of it right now, but if you just go to Amazon and just type in Richard Oberlander, it'll come right up. It's really a very comprehensive book about animal agriculture's impact on soil erosion, climate destabilization, water pollution, and water depletion. I mean, everything. And he's traveled extensively in Europe and South America and Asia and Africa, documenting all these things. And It's just a really great book, and it's the kind of book you could read and you could reread and study. And okay, I just got a note from the woman we're staying with that Richard Openlander has been having some family health issues, but he'll be back into it soon. So I guess that's the answer. I guess she knows Richard. What we're staying with is wonderful people, Susan and Richard Pitcairn. I don't know if you've heard of Richard Pitcairn. He's a very famous veterinarian, Dr. Pitcairn's Guide to whatever it is, taking care of your dog. And they're vegans, and they're starting, they're recommending that all dogs, be eating vegan food, and they're getting a lot of flack because he's been publishing this book for years. But they're sticking with it, and it's really great to see. Richard Oppenlander's
I hope everything gets better for him soon, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just looking up the name of his book. His name of his book is, here it is, it's called Food Choice and Sustainability. Why buying local, eating less meat, and taking baby steps won't work. he really thinks that, we need to move very quickly toward a complete vegan world or we're not going to survive. And I highly recommend that book. And I think, basically he's taking a much more, in a sense, radical approach than Al Gore does, because he puts animal agriculture right in the center of everything. But I think, time will tell, and I think it's going to have to move more and more in that direction. People are going to more and more, I think, take an approach that Shelley is taking, which is to really include everything.
Well, excellent presentation by Shelley. Thank you for having her. Thank you very
much. Oh, you're welcome, Susan. Thanks. Okay. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, all right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Great. All right. Well, Shelley, do you have any last final thoughts or anything you want to share with everybody before we kind of wrap it up? I have a few other things I want to cover here. You're certainly welcome to stay on the call if you want to listen in, but we just really appreciate your sharing your experience, your insight, and your your awareness of all this. But yes, is there anything else? Maybe like Susan said, that those three sort of main points, maybe jotting them down, and I can put it out in the email. I always send a follow up email out to everybody. The main things that were covered, whatever. So that might be helpful too.
Yes, I can do that. I'll do that for you. And I'd like to say something here that to me is at the crux of not just climate change but all environmental problems that we have. And Al Gore said the same thing, and he says it repeatedly, that these issues, these problems are moral problems.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's great.
They were ethical problems.
Right.
And I've spent many years in wildlife and doing presentations and giving formal and informal talks on wildlife and natural history and trying to educate people about wild animals and that they're not that much different than we are.
Right.
And all the things that count, their lives are pretty similar to ours, minus the text. And I've also, worked with a lot of domestic animals. I've spent many years volunteering for organizations that help dogs and cats, and I saved many birds and cats and dogs from the street in abusive situations, and some of them became my beloved pets. And I've even had meaningful and intelligent experiences with fish and insects, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I've learned over the years that this way of eating, veganism, whole food, plant-based veganism, raw food, whatever a person where they want to take it, it benefits our species in better health, But that also includes a higher energy or spiritual vibration,
right,
due to less involvement on our part with inflicting pain on other beings, even if indirectly or unwittingly.
Right.
And so this, when we are doing what is right by ourselves, through our health and our personal growth, and when we're doing what is right by the earth and other animals, then the ramifications are circular.
Right.
We don't only benefit and thrive emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, but the environment also benefits and thrives. Water, land, air, including the climate. So I think that this is at the, and you talk about this an awful lot, that how we eat and how we view others and how we treat others and the planet, it all comes, what goes out, what goes around comes around, as the saying goes. That
right,
the more compassionate we are towards ourselves, to eat in a way that is healthy, and the more compassionate we are towards other people, obviously,
right,
and that other creatures, no matter what they are, the bacteria in the soil, you know, they have
right,
their place, they nurture us. They're,
right,
they're not nothings. In fact, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't even be here. So
right,
I think we have to realize that the priorities are moral priorities and ethical priorities, and that when we have them, quote, right, then everything benefits. We benefit, other creatures benefit, and the earth benefits, and we all help each other to be sustainable.
Right.
So
yeah,
that's the idea I would like to leave with people, that people think, what I do doesn't matter, I'm just one person. No, that is not true. Everything that everybody does makes the world. So the more people who are seeing the connections and acting from that knowledge,
right,
that influences the world around us. And we almost must remember, we also must remember that we aren't just us. We aren't just one person. We're siding in our behaviors with other people who are doing the same thing. So we need to be on the side of, if you want to put it that way, that which is progressive and kind and compassionate and supporting of the sustainability of the earth and our sustainability as a species.
Right. Yeah, and I know Madeline and I both, through some of our conversations we've had over the years, know that you're quite serious about the spiritual path that you think is really the most important thing in a human being's life, and the benefits of a plant-based diet for being more sensitive, really, I think, to other beings as beings. And I don't want to go into a whole big thing with that, but I just want to mention that you bring this aspect, besides the climate change, your own personal life. I've heard some of your stories of your interactions with cats and birds and different animals and so forth, and I think it's really an important thing to realize how much our own personal lives are enriched by opening up to animals as beings and opening up the psychic capacity, not in any weird way, but just the idea that we can be sensitive to what animals are thinking and feeling, and their messages to us, and that they're probably hoping that we human beings will sooner or later become less self-absorbed and start to listen and be aware of them as that they're here. They are, you know.
I'm sure that has crossed some of their minds.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And we have a few words here from somebody you know.
Yes. Hi.
Madeline.
Yeah, Madeline. Mm-hmm. thank you so much, Shelley. And I think what I really admire on you is that you're an avid vegan who is a climate changer. So that's so
you're
important.
You're changing the climate.
Yeah, you're changing the climate.
that's a good one.
So that's so important because most of the climate change people or ecological or all these, they don't make the connection to the veganism.
Yeah.
And so I really like this that you do that, and on top of it, you even cover spirituality, which is so important. So thank you so much for doing this. And I also like to quickly mention that Susan Pitcairn actually is a wonderful artist, and she has all the paintings and drawings of her in the new book of Richard Pitcairn.
Yeah, the illustrations
which,
of animals. And, right.
It's an important thing that art is kind of loosening up a little bit, just the words by themselves. So I like to add that so we don't miss it.
Great.
So, yeah, that's actually what I liked saying.
Well, thank you so much, Madeline, for mentioning that. And thank you so much, Shelley. It was great to have you with us, and really appreciate your work. And we'll stay in touch, of course, not only with you, but also if you can give us a few of the main points, we can pass those along to everyone who's been listening. And now I'd like to go into a few other points here. But thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Great. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so I'd like to, there's a few things I wanted to cover. And also, just to say to everyone again, if you have anything you'd like to share with everyone who's on the call, or if you would like to ask me a question about something else, because we've been kind of focusing on the presentation with Shelley, and climate change, and I like that what you said at the end. Being as vegans, we're not just talking about climate change; we're changing the climate. I mean, we're changing the climate of the discussion anyway, as best we can in our society to include our routine abuse of animals. And I think that's so important. All right, so press star 6 if you'd like to say anything at all, or ask any questions, or make any comments. And I just wanted to cover a few other things. We've, as I said, we've been traveling, and we just now finished a real whirlwind tour in Phoenix. We did four events, actually, in one day on Sunday, and then we gave lectures every night since then. Monday night it was we did one on Sunday evening, by the way. It was at a place called Soul Center. This is something I was inspired by a few of the things that we discovered here, so I just wanted to throw these out to everyone as ideas. For example, Soul Center. Soul Center is a actual place. A few people, I think it's primarily two couples, got together and bought a building. I think it's 420 Hawthorne Street or something in Mesa, I believe it is, Mesa, Arizona, and which is part of Phoenix, basically, and they call it Soul Center, and it's a vegan community center, basically, and it's really a beautiful space. It's a space for people to get together and have cooking classes, have lectures. They have a community garden which is really beautiful. They've got a lot of greens and things and raised beds and things growing there. It's a place for people to come together for meetings and gatherings of various kinds. And anyone in the vegan community, you know, can use it. I think they have it sort of working as a something that people can rent out or do work trade agreements on or something like that. But I think this kind of a thing, there's a similar thing actually in Berkeley, the Animal Rights Center, which is a similar kind of a center where people come and put on workshops and retreats and classes of various kinds and gatherings. And I think it would be so great to have networks of these centers in cities around the United States. It's a community resource where people can come together for healing, and it wouldn't have to be always vegan, strictly vegan things. I mean, it could be something that supports veganism, you know, social justice issues, health issues of various kinds, wellness, environmental things. So I'm hoping, just to plant a seed, but that idea goes forth and multiplies, because I think having these kinds of vegan community centers is such a great idea. There's also in Phoenix something called Souls Unfolding. Some of you may be aware of Souls Unfolding, but Souls Unfolding is a Sunday morning, it's a church. Every Sunday morning, a couple has founded this, I think over a year ago, probably close to 2 years ago. And every Sunday morning, they have a service. And the whole idea is that it's vegan spirituality. It's a vegan service. They have the basic teachings are compassion for all beings. I have not been to the service on Sunday morning in Phoenix. I was speaking at the Unity Church in Mesa that particular Sunday that we were here. But I've talked to people who have attended, and they say great things about it. And it's not that big. I mean, I think it's maybe 30 people or so on Sunday morning. But it can certainly grow and be perhaps a model for something very interesting. Another third thing, so that's something. Anyway, the idea that anyone feels so inclined, you can start your own church, in a sense. And, I mean, why not? You know, this is religious freedom in the United States. You don't need any approval from any government or anything. You can just do it. And if people are interested, they can come and make donations, and you can speak about, because one of the main points is, I say, in the World Peace Diet, that religion, which is really the vessel in any society for ethical teachings and for moral teachings and for spiritual teachings. And if religions are looking the other way and dropping the ball and not including compassion for all life as part of their ethical, moral, and spiritual teachings, then it's time to either A, to reinvigorate and to revise these religious traditions so that they do include these things, or to create new ones. And new ones are always being created. And who else? I mean, we don't have to look to other people. We can do it ourselves. It's wonderful to see it happening within traditions. I mean, I think a lot of Thich Nhat Hanh and other people, Supreme Master Ching Hai, and there's quite a few people in the yoga tradition who are really bringing veganism very strongly. Sharon Gannon, for example, and others, and Anna Ferguson, bringing the vegan teachings into more spiritual orientations. We have even Unity and Unitarian movements in certain cities are getting pretty explicit about bringing in veganism. And I think we can create new situations like in Phoenix, Souls Unfolding, as an example. There's nothing stopping us. If we feel drawn in that direction, that's something each one of us can think about doing and work together, perhaps cooperate with other people in creating something like this. There's also in Phoenix an interesting thing, a woman, I think it's primarily a husband and wife, Will, her name is Nadia, I think. Anyway, they've created something called Zen Nights. I may have mentioned it once before on this call, but on the last Friday of every night, of every month, in Mesa, Arizona, there's a huge block party that's totally vegan. And there's lots, we went to it one last year, about a year ago, And there's quite a few booths. They're all serving vegan food, and other booths that serve where people offer sort of similar things, different kinds of water filters maybe, or all kinds of things that people who are care about their health and about the earth would be interested in. There's music, there's there's talks, there's food at the booths, and also some local restaurants that's vegan. And it's a big party. It's very successful. It's been going really well now for over a year, and now they've expanded it to the first Friday of every month in Phoenix, right? So now there's twice a month it's happening here in Phoenix, the Zen Nights phenomenon. And the woman who's in charge of this, she was just telling me the other night on Sunday when we were at the Soul Center, that on Monday, this coming Monday, it's Martin Luther King Day, and the city of Mesa, and she said this is the first time this has ever been done in the United States ever, where there's been a city government, an official city government, has mandated that the whole parade, the Martin Luther King parade and the Martin Luther King festival following the parade, is going to be all vegan, all plant-based, in honor of Martin Luther King's commitment to social justice. And she has been tasked with setting the whole thing up. So she's organizing, the city has given her, I guess because she's got such a good track record with the city of doing, I guess they just love what she's doing with Zen Nights. It's great, for everybody. I mean, it's good for the local merchants, it's good for the local people, it's good for health. It's just a very popular thing, and the city government likes it. So now they've asked her to sponsor and organize this event for Martin Luther King's birthday, and it's big. I think she was telling me that they expect about 10,000 people possibly in that area, in that neighborhood, for a whole big vegan event based on social justice and his teachings. And there's a parade, I think, from 10 to noon. It ends at the center of Mesa, and they're setting up a big stage, and then they're having speeches. And so Silas Rao, who some of you maybe know, Dr. Silas Rao, who's lives here in Phoenix, he's written a book called Carbon Dharma, a book on climate change, and another book, Carbon Yoga, on climate change. I wrote the foreword to the second one. And he has been asked to give a five-minute talk to these 10,000 people, and I have now also been asked to give a talk as well. Each of us will be giving a talk. They're relatively short talks, just 5 minutes or so, but from the stage to that many people, it's a great opportunity to make the connections between compassion for human beings, compassion for animals, love and action, which is really what veganism is. It's exactly that message that Martin Luther King was bringing. You know, he said that the bombs that explode in Vietnam are destroying the cities in the United States. It's the same thing when the violence that's happening behind the closed doors of slaughterhouses is destroying the cities in the United States, our communities, our health, our environment. We don't see the violence, but we can see the effects all around us. And Dr. Martin Luther King was great at making these connections explicitly, and his wife and his son are both vegans for ethical reasons, and I think that's really an integral part of his message. So again, this is something that maybe some of you might be able to see this as possibilities in your communities, something like an evening once a month potluck, it's more of a fair. But then it's interesting to see how when we do something that opens some doors, then other doors open that you never would have imagined when you first did it, and then that'll lead to other doors opening, and the ripples just suddenly start going out in a sort of logarithmic fashion. They just accelerate enormously, and that's what's happening with the vegan movement. It's just accelerating enormously. Economist magazine, which is probably the most traditional, to me, very sort of unsympathetic kind of a magazine, but they has proclaimed 2019 as the year of the vegan, as one of the veganism will be one of the major economic trends and powers as people begin to move away from animal sources of food and protein. And I was just reading that in for Twitter that so far in January, vegan, the word vegans, hashtag vegan is the most trended word in Twitter. So we're only 3 or 4% of the people, and yet we're having a huge impact, and it's growing all the time. So that's one of the themes that really has been striking me as we've been speaking the last few nights. You know, we spoke, as I was saying, at the Soul Center on Sunday night, and we did an intuition workshop on Sunday afternoon. And then on Monday night, we spoke at the Pomegranate Cafe, which is a wonderful vegan cafe. It met Madeline's seal of approval, which is very difficult because it's all organic as well as vegan and really very high-quality food. And then we gave another talk and on Tuesday night at one of these special environmentally friendly apartment buildings by a local vegan activist, put the whole thing together, a wonderful young man named Brandon, worked with the local Humane Society to get the people to come. And then last night in Payson, Arizona, which is a small kind of cowboy town, about an hour and a half north of Phoenix. But it was great to see some local vegans and other people that were interested showing up and interested in hearing more about the message. And then we came up here to Sedona today. We're having a Sedona Veg Fest, which is the third annual Veg Fest. And they have a lot of actual really well-known people. In fact, Fiona Oakes is flying all the way from England to speak here on Saturday, and I think you all probably know her. She's the famous, I think she's just a very inspiring person. I've had the opportunity to meet her and be on a panel with her. Madeline and I both met her a couple of years ago at the Veg Fest in London. She runs her own animal sanctuary. It's just the two of her and her husband. And so she's up every morning at about 4:30 in the morning feeding the animals and taking care of them. And she's just a tireless worker, but she also is an enormously talented runner who has broken many world records and Guinness World Book of Records. And it's all the more remarkable because she was very seriously sick and injured as a child and had so many problems with one of her knees. She actually has no kneecap at all, and yet she has won marathons in the Sahara Desert and over the Arctic. She's won marathons on every continent and ultramarathons, and she's the subject of this new film by Keegan Kuhn that you may have seen called Running for Good. And Keegan is now living here in Sedona, so we're hoping to see him this weekend also. Silas Rao will be here, coming to join us. Also, some of you know Dr. Silas Rao's work. We've had him on as a special guest on our World Peace Diet Circle gatherings, and maybe we should have him on again. He just had a conference in October talking about the concept of year zero, which I think is a very important idea. And the concept of year zero is that, according to a study commissioned by the World Wildlife Fund, the way the trends are going right now, the year 2026 will be the year when we see the absolute mass extinction of mammals and all species happening and, in a sense, completing, according to their studies. By the year 2026, virtually all of the mammals and many of the other animals on the planet will go extinct if we continue on the trajectory that we're on. So Silesh is working very hard to help raise awareness, kind of ringing the alarm bells in a positive and loving way that we need to drastically reduce the amount of animal agriculture on this planet if we're going to have a world not only for all the other animals, but for ourselves as well. So he'll be up here. Robert Cheek, some of you know Robert Cheek, a wonderful He has the veganbodybuilding.com website. He's a great vegan advocate and bodybuilder, also a great runner as well, great athlete. And so we saw him on Sunday night. He'll be up here along with Fiona Oaks. So Dr. Joel Kahn will be here. And really some fantastic people. Joanne Kung will be here. She's from Richmond, Virginia. We met her in Richmond. The interesting thing about Joanne, she's also a pianist and a longtime vegan. And also she went to India, kind of literally followed in our footsteps about a year later, or maybe not that long, maybe eight months later, worked with the exact same person that we worked with in India. Wonderful man who's the founder of the Sattvic Indian Vegan Society, which is the main vegan society in India. And she went around and did some lectures in the same venues that we did. And she's a really wonderful person. We enjoy her. So she's flying out to speak at this conference as well. And so you can find out more on the internet. But it's great to see these veg fests really booming and enjoying lots of people. I just read today that the Veg Fest in Berlin this past summer drew 60,000 people. That's a world record. I mean, that's just mind-boggling. 60,000 people came to the Veg Fest in Berlin. So very often when people ask me what's one thing they can do in their community to help bring the vegan message to get stronger, I always ask, do you have a Veg Fest? And if you don't, well, I mean, if you can work with some other people, you can start small, maybe just get 500 or 1,000 people maybe come. But it's amazing how they grow. I think you all heard me talk about Athens, Greece, how it went in 3 years from 6,000 to 12,000 to close to 18,000 people. And we see this happening. You know, these veg fests are tremendous. There's huge ones now in Chicago, you know, lots of different cities in California, Florida, all over, you know, Michigan, everywhere. And Sedona has one now for 3 years, and it's getting bigger and better every year. Phoenix has one, of course, Tucson. We're heading from, so on Monday we'll be going back down to speak at Martin Luther King there, and then going down to Tucson and speaking there, and then after a little break in Southern California, going to Atlanta. So if you know any folks in Atlanta or in Athens, Lorena Mukay, who we've had on the call before, she's the founder of the Ethical Choices Program, which I don't know if I've given you an update recently, but it's just going really well. We're on track. I'm on the board of this Ethical Choices Program, and Lorena's on track, and the teachers are on track to, I think in April, the number of high school students that will have been reached will equal about 10% of all the high school students in the whole United States. Plus, it's expanding into Canada and Australia. There's people there teaching and bringing the vegan message to the public schools, and they're expanding into colleges as well. So it's really expanding beautifully, and the ripple effect is enormous. It's getting very, very good reviews from teachers and students, and even from parents. I mean, you know, parents are usually the big problem, but there's been virtually less than, well, I think, 0.1% of any complaints, virtually no complaints from parents, which is just a testament to how well Lorena has put this program together and how carefully she trains everyone and to be effective and to not create a lot of negative feedback. It's quite a feat, but she's great at that. So anyway, she's helping organize some lectures for us in Atlanta. And then we're going to Athens, Georgia, which is another really wonderful place. We've been there before quite a few times. And then we're going down to Florida. You can go to our website. We've got quite a few different events in Florida. And my mother and my sister, the longtime vegans, will be seeing them. We'll be speaking in Tallahassee, and in Gainesville, and in Ocala, and in quite a few other cities, Tampa, Sun City, and some of these are also being coordinated by people who are World Peace Science facilitators, and or people also in the vegan spirituality movement or people who are just local vegan activists. There's a wonderful radio program in Atlanta that's been run for years. It's a vegan radio program. And, the woman that runs that program always helps organize lectures. We're going to Hippocrates Health Institute again. I highly recommend everyone just be aware of Hippocrates Health Institute. If you know people who are facing serious health challenges, where they really may be on the edge of passing away or something, or getting really seriously, like the doctors can't do anything, Hippocrates is a great place to go. It's basically an extremely clean food. It's mostly all sprouts and lots of helpful other modalities that are used. So we'll be there for a whole week this year and later this year and at the end of February, and also giving lectures. Our World Peace Facilitator, Philip Nicozisis, who travels with us to India, to Europe. He lives there and his parents. So he's helped set up lectures and libraries at his parents' home, also at Hippocrates, and also at a place called Sacred Space, which is a vegan lecture space and food serving place in Miami. It's just great to see all these different resources growing and developing. And I sometimes joke. I remember when people asked me. I remember when in the early days of the vegan movement, it was so small. I knew everybody in the movement, and we all knew what everybody was doing, and it really wasn't all that much. And now it's going so fast, nobody can keep track of it. It's just exploding. It's beautiful to see. And then from there, we'll be going on the Post Holiday at Sea, which is a vegan cruise. A lot of great people, teachers going on that. And this has really grown enormously. It's twice as big. The last time we went was 2012, I think. And at that point, it was up to about 1,000 people. Now it's over 2,000 people. In fact, it's closed. I think they're not even taking any more. You can't go anymore unless somebody cancels. So that's a super long one. They usually are about 6 days. Now this one is 12 days, I believe. So we're going all the way down to Colombia, South America, and it'll be kind of interesting. And then when we come back, anyone in Texas, we're doing a major whirlwind tour of Texas with lots of cities. And you can see it on our website. I won't go through it all, but it's Galveston and Beaumont and Houston and Austin and San Antonio and Fort Worth and Dallas and San Marcos and a bunch of other places, and doing some workshops, lectures, Sunday morning service at the Unitarian Church, and just tremendous energy in Texas. It's really fantastic to see. So and then we'll be heading back to California after that, and going to Southern California and going back home. So that's what we have coming up. If you know folks in any of those areas, we hope to see you or see them. And I started saying, one of the things that I've noticed and I've been talking about a little bit on these lectures lately is the basic fact that what we can see happening very clearly is what I just mentioned, which is how quickly the vegan movement is growing, how it's so many new people are joining and creating YouTube channels and meetup groups and restaurants and sanctuaries and finding ways to bring the message to more people in more new and creative ways. So that's one thing that's really exploding. The other thing that's really exploding is the complete opposite of that, which is the absolute utter devastation human beings are causing to ecosystems. Soil erosion, rainforest destruction, ocean depletion, ocean acidification, water depletion, air pollution, climate destabilization, species extinction, world hunger, conflict, war, nuclear proliferation. I mean, we're seeing really just these two completely contrary forces just really ramifying, if you know that word, ramifying, branching out and spreading. And so it really feels like we're in a birth process that's getting more and more intense. And that's why I think it's so important for us to take as best we can, as deep a look as we possibly can into the roots of the crisis that we're facing, and to address those roots, as Shelley's doing with bringing in veganism when she talks about climate change. We can bring in veganism when we talk about social justice issues. We can bring in veganism when we talk about the terrible problems that we're having now with trafficking, you know, trafficking children, trafficking women, human slavery. I mean, we're enslaving billions of animals. We're trafficking billions of animal children. We're sexually abusing billions of animal children and female animals. As we sow, so shall we reap. We need to really understand the power of the boomerang effect, of the template that we're creating in consciousness of violence and abuse of children and of sacred feminine, and to transform our attitudes and our behavior if we want to be able to be effective in solving our problems and to bring this understanding to the world. So just today, earlier today, hopefully you all got it. I sent out an email to everyone on our list, on our big list, with link to, and actually the entire text to a new essay that I just wrote, which I hope you will all have a chance to read. And it's this, the title is Satyagraha, the Magic Button, and it's basically making an effort to help us to see that we can all make a positive difference when we share our own truth. To share our own truth, and when we do that clearly and with congruence, when we're really living this truth as kind of kindness and compassion for animals and for each other, we can share this truth with other people effectively. And just how important that is, and how really I think in many ways how beautiful it is when we understand this and our lives. I think become much more joyful, much more meaningful. Many vegans feel very frustrated and alienated and isolated because of many walls that go up when we say we're not going to eat the kinds of foods that everyone's eating when we're living in a particular culture. So there's a way. Fortunately, I think beyond this, we can reconnect with the joy and beauty and harmony of our life and meaning, and make new friends. If we may lose some friends, but we can make new friends and deepen our relationships with the ones that we have. And in a nutshell, I have the sentence. Sometimes people ask me to say this, and so I thought I'll just write it here clearly for everyone. The little mini elevator speech that we can all say, something along those lines anyway, because I think it kind of sums up the existential nature of the situation that we're all in, which is that we're born into a culture where we're eating animal foods because we're just following orders, and we all know in our bones that these orders are not in our best interest, but we do it anyway because we want to conform and we don't want to be different, and we think it tastes good and it doesn't really matter and we're just one person and so forth. So this is it, right here. This is the quote. I am deeply grateful that I discovered that the only reason I was eating animal foods for all the years that I did was because I was just following orders. Fortunately, I realized that those orders were not in my best interest or in the interest of our world, and so I'm not doing it anymore, and it's fantastic. So that's the basic message, and I think if we can plant the seed as often as we can, and then go back as best we can and nurture those seeds with love and respect for other people and help those seeds to grow through creating vegan communities, veg fests, meetup groups, cooking classes, restaurants, sanctuaries, publicity, YouTube, whatever, you know, all these different things we can do, conversations of various kinds, then we're creating the communities that are transforming our world, and we're being part of the solution rather than being just part of the problem. So I really would like to thank all of you, because I know that if you're still, I mean, if you're on this call, that you're a huge part of this movement and a very critical and important part of the movement. So I want to thank you all for your efforts, and I can see now that we are at our time. It's half past the hour, and so it's really time for me to wrap up the call. Let's see. I have to check and see if I have any other last-minute messages, but it looks like there aren't any more, so that's good. So, right. And we do have, besides this new essay that I wrote, which I hope you will read, we also have just posted some new intuitive cooking videos by Madeline. One is the stuffed breadstick tree, which is a really wonderful work of art. And I tell you, we got such a wonderful, this is a comment. I'll just read this comment. This woman, Jojo, her name is, she says, "Madeline, your videos always make me feel like you are a dear friend who came over to cook in my kitchen. Watching this video gave me my first experience with the hunger sensations after over 3 years without it, caused from a bicycle accident that, in addition to numerous titanium implants to fix my body and crushed face, also resulted in traumatic brain injury. The brain injury destroyed my ability to taste, to smell, and to experience hunger. As I watched your lovely video, I had a moment of hunger and went to the cupboard to find a treat. Yippee and thank you." Isn't that amazing? I mean, can you imagine someone? I mean, most of us have the opposite, right? We're always going to the cupboard and because we're hungry. But this is a woman who hasn't been able to experience any desire for food or taste or smell or any hunger for 3 years. And watching this little video made her actually hungry enough that she started wanting to eat something. Yay, so hopefully she'll want to eat only vegan food. So check out the vegan breadstick tree and also the vegan Italian calzone if you want to find some new things. We love sharing both theoretical and practical methods of bringing the message to people. And we look forward to hopefully seeing you all in the next few months, if it's at all possible. And our next call will be on February 14th. February 21st. February 21st. That's the third Thursday in February. We will be in Florida at my mother's, my wonderful 90-year-old vegan mother, visiting her and just getting ready to do a bunch more lectures. So please put that on your calendar. Call in, and if you have any questions during the month, write them down, I'd love to discuss them with you. And also, please have a look at the resources that I do every month for January 2019. I love this quote. This is a quote by Mary Baker Eddy. Now, she was the founder of Christian Science. And Christian Science really, to me, is a very powerful teaching of spirituality and healing, spiritual healing. And it does have some great seeds of veganism. She wrote this in one of her, I'm not sure, one of her essays or letters. "What are gustatory enjoyments? Chewing and swallowing a roasted turkey or gulping down a lamb that licked the hand just raised to shed its blood. These are the pleasures of sense, but do they belong to the man who is the image and likeness of God?" Isn't that beautiful? Very powerful. I mean, she wrote this, 150 years ago, but I think, or maybe 130 years ago. But, it's really very important to honor, I think, this ancient wisdom. Not really ancient, but this wisdom from our culture and from those who have gone before us. So please do check out. We've got some videos. We've got a lot of things here in the resources. Lots of amazing news. Oh my gosh! Once I start talking about this, I'll go on and on. But anyway, the California ban on foie gras was upheld by the Supreme Court, and that's really good news. The World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, recommends reducing meat consumption. I mean, that's big news. There's a whole lot of stuff here. Check it all out. And we've got a brand new book called Daily Veg Inspirations, Jewels from the World Peace Diet. We have 356 excerpts from the World Peace Diet. So you can, every day you can have in a book, you can read one of the jewels from the World Peace Diet. It just came out. Finally, we got them here in Sedona, the newest versions, which are really good. So let us know. You can order them on our website, worldpeacediet.com. And we have a new book called Buddhism and Veganism, which is at the publisher right now, the printers. It should be released in mid-February. It's taking so long to design and print this book. But anyway, it's on the way. Vegan Publishers is handling the whole thing in Boston, Massachusetts. But that's another wonderful thing. Buddhism and Veganism book is coming. So that's it for now. And much love to you all from Madeline and me. And we look forward to speaking with you in February. And keep up the great work you're doing. Enjoy all of your days. And thanks for the love in your hearts and the kindness that flows forth from your actions. Know that every act does help and does bless others. And maybe we can close with just a, what should we close with? Just a little short one, maybe. This is, since we went kind of long, this is a very short one. It's only 1 minute long. It's called Corona. This is from our Sky High album. Enjoy, and much love to you all. Thank you so much.